During rabbinical school, I served for 4 years as a rabbinic intern in Greenwich, Connecticut. I will never forget the first Shabbat of my internship. Everything was prepared, sermons, Devar Torahs. I got to the synagogue a little early that Friday afternoon. The rabbi was going to drive me to the home where I would be hosted for the next 4 years on Shabbat. We got to the house, I approached the door, I rang the doorbell, and the next thing I heard was howling and barking like I had never heard before. See, the secret was out pretty quickly. I had a huge fear of dogs. I thought this internship was over before it even began. And so the woman politely opened the door, and she said, "Rabbi Sherman, welcome to your new home. Don't worry about those dogs. They stay in the kitchen." I thought to myself, this guy's not going to have a Shabbat dinner for the next 4 years either. That night at services, the rabbi approached me gently. He said, "Come over here." He said, "Erez, I'm going to teach you a lot in this internship about how to be a pulpit rabbi. But if there's one thing you're going to learn in this internship, you're going to learn to get over your fear of dogs." I proudly stand here this morning to tell you when I graduated rabbinical school 4 years later, I had two best friends. Their names were Molly and Ruby, and they were the Portuguese water dogs that came running at me that Friday afternoon. The rabbi wasn't telling me that I needed to love dogs the rest of my life, but he was making me ask a serious question. He was making me ask, how would I face fear and not allow that fear to overtake my life? The 18th century historian Edward Gibbons teaches us that history is an account of crimes, of follies, and disasters. But he also says that history is an account of the struggle against those crimes, those follies, and against those disasters. And he said it exists throughout all times and all societies, and it is what grants us a moral compass. Nuclear weapons, underground tunnels, Ebola and enterovirus, traffic accidents, school shootings, shootings of Canadian military, our brothers and sisters in Israel being plowed down by drivers, putting trust in public officials and religious leaders, public speaking. No matter how big or small of this list, they are all legitimate fears that some of us may have. A poll just came out about the top fears that people in this country have. Some of them I have never heard of in my life. Trypophobia. The fear of irregular patterns like a beehive. Others are on the list, the usuals, arachnophobia, acrophobia, the fear of heights. But the top fear that list, at least according to this poll, was something called agoraphobia, the fear of being trapped in a spot for a long time that can cause panic. Now, this poll did not have a footnote, but I would guess that many of the respondents to this poll did not have in mind our parasha this morning of Noah. But if you think about it for a second, what did Noah do besides trap himself in an ark that caused panic, not just for those animals and people in the ark, but for those outside as well? Sam Wells, a priest in the Church of England, writes in his book, Facing Fear with Faith. He writes, "We fear because we do not want to lose. what we love. We fear because we do not want to lose what we love. So he says, a world without fear, it would not be the good thing that we think it would be. It would not just be a world without danger, but it would also be a world without love. In times of fear, you've probably experienced this before, we are most alive. The adrenaline is running. And he says that we show our faith in how we respond to fear and in the way that we show our love. So this morning, I ask ourselves, as Jews, how do we address fear in our own lives? Not just theoretical fear, but real fear. All you got to do is turn on the TV, read a newspaper, go online. Real fear exists within our own Jewish community. Anti-Semitism growing rampant in Europe. BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions with our children on the college campus. American children fleeing this great country for the ideals of ISIS. The economy, our jobs, our relationships. Real fear that strikes right at our hearts. You know, in our preschools, when we teach the story of Noah, we often talk about a beautiful bird, the dove, a symbol of peace with the olive branch in its mouth. But we skip over another bird that I want to focus on for a moment, and that bird is the raven. The first bird that Noah sent out of the ark to see if there was dry land was not the dove. It was the raven, who is not a symbol of peace, but it's rather a symbol of cruelty and heartlessness. Our rabbis record a very interesting conversation between the raven and Noah. The raven's not very happy that he's being sent on this mission. The raven says this, Noah, you hate me, and your God hates me. He says, Noah, you hate me because you sent me on this mission, and if the cold or the heat kills me, there's only one other of me in there, and my entire species will be gone. And he says, your creator, your God, hates me because God chose 7 of some animals, but for me, the raven, only 2. I don't know about you, but to me, that sounds like a pretty fair complaint. Until we read about what the raven did next. The raven had a good complaint, but after the raven left the ark on his mission to find dry land, he found food. He found a human carcass on top of a mountain, and instead of going on to complete the mission that he was supposed to, the raven begins to chow down and eat his prey. So the rabbis ask, what happened? What happened to this raven that he never reported back to Noah for his mission? See, when the raven left the ark, there was no more fear. When the world was being destroyed by water, when people were being oppressed, the raven had it in him with fear that he too championed the oppressed. But when the water was gone, when the sun was shining, when he was in the better situation, it was the raven that forgot. Forgot how bad it was, not just for himself, but more importantly, for the others still stuck back in that ark. He didn't report back that it was safe, but instead the raven decided to serve his own greed. See, it's very rare for an individual to serve God when things are going pretty well. When things are not going so well, it's easy to walk into a sanctuary or a synagogue and ask a prayer for God. But it is the pious person who serves God during pain, but also begins to serve God when things are going well. Rabbi Mark Angel, founder of the Institute of Jewish Ideas and Ideals, explains that Noah is guilty. He says that Noah is guilty of something called cocooning. The ark was a cocoon. It was a safe space for Noah, for his family, and for all of the animals. I don't know about you, but I'm guilty of cocooning as well. How many times have we decided to speak only to those of our socioeconomic class, of our same religious or ethnic background? How many of us decide that we're going to interface with somebody through a computer instead of looking them eye to eye? How many of us walking down the street or in an airport put the earphones in our ears and the entire world becomes oblivious besides what that which is in front of us? We're human beings, and that's how we deal with fear. And we deal with fear by allowing ourselves to control our own environment. But by doing this, we lose something. We lose a sense of responsibility, we lose a sense of tolerance, and we lose a sense of worrying about others. Don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with building a cocoon. I think we're doing that right now. These walls of this sacred sanctuary is what we do every Shabbat and every time we walk into a sacred synagogue. That's exactly what Shabbat does for us. But according to my opinion, that's why Shabbat is only one day, and there's six other days of the week. Because we walk out of that cocoon ready to serve not just God, but each other. This past summer during the war in Israel, there was a conversation recorded between a three-year-old girl and her mother that I would like to share with you. The mother and daughter were speaking, and the daughter said, "You know what, Mommy? You know, yesterday I met fear." The mother thought for a moment and she said, "Well, what did fear look like?" The daughter said, "He looked like a monster. It was this big." "And what did you tell him?" "I told him to go away." "Did he go away?" "Yes, he went away. But he did not want to go away." "So what happened to him?" the mother said. And the daughter responded, "In the end, we went downstairs. We celebrated a birthday. We had Hello Kitty cupcakes and balloons. There was a magician. There were surprises. There were lots of little children." You see, fear went away when love visited. Thank God. Thank God that we are part of a large embrace called the Jewish people. And so as we sit here in this sacred space, in this sanctuary, enjoying each other's company, some of us here are experiencing sorrow, while others are celebrating joy and simcha. We sing beautiful words of liturgy, but here's the question. In 15 minutes, when the last cookie at the Kiddush table is done with, and we exit the sanctuary, what are we going to do? Are we going to build an ark? Are we going to build a cocoon? Are we going to be like the raven who is compassionate only when he wants to, but not when he needs to be? Or will we do something else? Will we face the fears of the world by sharing our love? So for the next time you ring that doorbell and the dogs start barking and howling and fear stares you down in the face, let's not be the raven. Rather, let's take those unintended and unexpected realities and turn them into sacred moments transformed by the love that each one of us has to offer. Shabbat Shalom.